welcome everyone to the Westfront Sports Review here, brought to you by Westfront. They're based at 9 Brewery Street in Newland. Their number is 09827 8531, or you can email them on westfront.co.nz. Well, Auckland, we had a bit of freedom come Friday, and I say there'll be a few heavy hits and a few lighter pockets this Monday, but we are going to get into it today with motorsport. And if you really love motorsports, we have the man who is an absolute legend, probably one of the best motorsports correspondents in this country. And we've got a lot, but I rate him as one of the best, not because he's a friend, but because he actually knows his stuff. The old Silver Tongue, Silver Fox, Sean Summerfield. Sean, good afternoon to you.
Jeez, I genuinely wondered who you're introducing, mate. How are you?
Yep. Hello.
Have you got me there, mate?
Yeah, got you. It sounded a bit faint there. Yeah, well, I tell you what, wasn't that Bathurst 1000? What a race. Chas Mostek takes a win, but oh, they're poor old Giz tyre problems, mate. What were some of your thoughts on that, man?
Oh, yeah, that's what happens. I mean, I think Shane was doing what he does and driving the car as hard as he possibly could. I mean, it was, if anyone can wring a car's neck, it's him. And he obviously gave it too much and ripped the tyre on the curbs. And keep in mind that happened at Mostert earlier in the race. So that just shows you what a drive we saw from him and how good that team had the car. And, of course, mentioning Lee Holdsworth, because he was doing so well, he actually got to do an extra stint. You don't often see that from the second driver.
No, you don't. And obviously, Tander had a really good nudge of it for Van Gisbergen. But when you look at it, the last 12 months Shane Van Gisbergen's had has just been absolutely extraordinary, Sean. You know, obviously another supercars title in the bag. It's just been, he's just had a hell of a year.
Well, he has. And you know, keep in mind that he broke his collarbone at the start of the season. He raced pretty much with an injury. I think he hadn't quite come clean on how bad it was. But, yeah, he's just had a rude season. And, you know, he got everything right in Sydney. He didn't panic. He did what he needed to do to win the championship rather than worrying about, you know, just had been on top of the podium every race. He got the points he needed. And, look, I don't know if he had the outright pace to make it perfect yesterday, because keep in mind, as well as the championship, he won fans' favourite and drivers' favourite. So the Peter Brock Trophy would have just kept that one off. But Bathurst, man, I tell you what, people can market sport, and, you know, we see the bollocks that goes on about some of the professional rugby. They try and make it more than it is sometimes. But you can do what you like, but nothing beats fantastic competition, and that's why Bathurst stood out. Bathurst isn't about the sponsors and how much they hype that up, even the emotional pit the opening piece they do. None of that. Bathurst is about a race. We drive 1,000 Ks, Auckland to Christchurch, and so much can happen. And yesterday, we've had kangaroos and horses and stuff in the past. Yesterday, we had an echidna, and that was just something else on the track. Brought out the safety car and put Brody Kosicki back into it, but it was, just something else.
And I have to agree with you on that. Also, one of the things about Bathurst, it's also about the fans, and it's not only the people in attendance, Sean, it's the people in Australia and New Zealand who, you know, who are glued to their TV, you know, watching this, watching the excitement, because in a race like that, there's so many dramas, so many twists and turns. And, you know, to me, like, I'm generally not a motorsport guy, and I'll be the first to admit that, but I love it. Because it has that drama, it has that excitement.
Well, exactly. What they do is they put the cars in a situation that they really weren't made for. I mean, that this race is so much longer than anything else they do. The track's really demanding. It's a very fast circuit. I think it does count as the fastest circuit they race, fastest track they race on. It's not actually technically a circuit. The 1 in 6 gradient of the climb. I mean, that's nuts. This shouldn't be a racetrack with that. And, you know, there's all these things that the adversity brings out the best. And, you know, teams having to quickly adjust and do the maths on fuel stops when it changes. And, you know, it's just phenomenal. And we see incredible teams make some bizarre calls, some bad calls. We see people, you know, try their luck and it comes off. And it's just, and that's the magic of it. But the thing is, and I truly believe this, no one gets to decide who wins this race. Bathurst decides who wins this race.
Yep, you're dead right there, Sean. And it's fantastic to watch. And I have to say, there would have been a lot of places, a lot of homes yesterday where Dad would have done the lawns early so he could watch Bathurst all day. But I have to say, but getting on to motorsport, Sean, this Formula One season is going to end up to be, it's going to the wire. We're heading to Abu Dhabi next week for the penultimate Grand Prix of the season. There's 8 points separating Verstappen and Hamilton. This season has been fantastic. And the one thing I've noticed about this F1 season, Sean, you never write off Lewis Hamilton.
Sorry, what was that about Lewis?
You never write him off. You never, never, ever write Lewis Hamilton off.
Oh, not at all. Not at all. It's it is just insane. I'm just trying to look, because I thought, were the points tied after today, or are they... Yes, they are.
Well, I'm just going to go to my information device. Well, I'll just go to the F1 standards. I think they may be tied, and three, I'm just trying to finish on this. If they are, like in your years of covering motorsports, have you ever seen a season like this where you've got potentially 2 points, two drivers tied, heading into basically a shootout at Abu Dhabi? So it's 369.5, 369.5, Verstappen and Hamilton. Botas is on third on 218. So, this season, it just reminds you of the great duels of Senna and Prost. It's just fantastic.
Oh, look, I think in some ways it's better than that, mate, because the fact that they are tied now, and we've just had that race where both of them were pulling out some pretty dodgy crap. Max just isn't as sharp at doing it as Lewis, but it just shows you this is as intense as it gets. And we talked about Bathurst when you make the calls. I mean, Lewis ducked in, thought that it was a safety car coming out. It got red flagged. That meant that Verstappen took the lead early on, but Lewis had fresher tyres, all sorts of stuff going on. It was just amazing. And you mentioned points there. I mean, you just consider this. 369, the next best driver, 218. That is nuts. That just shows you how much of a two-horse race this is. And it shows you how good these drivers are. That said, though, the cars pretty much sum it up, because third and fourth are a Mercedes and a Red Bull as well. So that just sort of gives you the idea of that. The McLaren and the Ferrari fighting to be the third best team. That's going to be a good race in there. But look, it is brilliant. And, Lewis is sort of the old head. Max is clearly a freakishly talented driver. But you've got to be more than just a fast driver. This race is one in the head, and obviously you come down to the team in the car, and I think right now Mercedes do have a pretty clear performance advantage.
Yeah, and I suppose, you know, like, if we look at this F1 season, it has been intense. It's been quite spiteful in many cases, as Formula One can be very, very spiteful, but you know, next week will be, you know, the final Grand Prix, and, you know,
there's nothing to be that.
This is just a shootout.
Oh, yeah. Well, truly, they made the that's the sort of stake thread. It was the same as yesterday. And at Bathurst, lost its edge, you know. They start to hear all the noises in the car and think something's wrong, and you know, whereas these, I was just looking at the margins and a half, and 20 odd laps.
And of course, that little bit of margin is the difference between that little bit of margin, that little error. And, you know, we talk about pressure when we talk about the All Blacks. Imagine the pressure these guys are under. You know, it's one little error, and you go from first to nowhere. And this, I'm really looking forward to Abu Dhabi next week, Sean.
Oh, look, I've been in garages when I used to cover A1GP, and I was looking at some data traces because everything's measured on the car. I mean, no one makes excuses better than race drivers, but there's nothing they can hide from now because everything they do is measured. And I remember Johnny Reid looking at his trace, and I think he was within about 4 metres a lap on his braking point at the fastest point. So he was doing about 270, 280 k's an hour, and he was within 4 metres or something every time where he hit the brakes. And you think how many metres a second you're covering at that speed. And it just showed you the accuracy of these drivers every turn in. And then they have the ability to see another line in the corner as well. Schumacher used to do it. He would take a different line for a few laps, and what he was doing was actually clearing the crap off the track. So when he was ready, he had himself a new light racing line. That's the presence of mind these people have. You'll hear them after the race. They'll say they saw a certain group of fans or something like that. They're operating at a whole different level. The speed at what things happen, you know, I know people that are much better peddlers in a car than I am who've tried to drive this level of car and they can't even get out of the pits.
Unbelievable. Wow. That's going to be exciting. But also some really great, wasn't it great, the Formula 2 over the weekend, watching a New Zealand 1-2 with Marcus Armstrong and Liam Lawson. Now, fantastic win for Marcus Armstrong. Liam Lawson second. You know, poor old Liam, I think he's, you know, he's had a bit of bad luck this season because he's eighth on the table at the moment. But, you know, if he didn't have all this bad luck, he'd be further up the table. But wasn't that fantastic, Sean?
What was that great line? If he didn't have any bad luck, he wouldn't have any luck at all. But
he's been brilliant. He's a fantastic driver, but it was just great to see that New Zealand flag, them two New Zealand flags, 1 and 2.
Oh, yeah, look, well and truly, Marcus is a very sort of handy peddler, and he's probably not attracted the attention of that Liam has. I mean, obviously, Liam was sort of denied, some could argue, cheated out of the DTM title this year as well, but he won fair and square at Monte Carlo, Monaco Grand Prix weekend, but then they found that he had the wrong sort of engine mapping for the start, which didn't actually help him, but that was the way it was. And that's the sort of the brutal nature of the game. I mean, heck, You can get the best bowling figures by a Kiwi test player ever and then have your team go and overshadow that by turning on a world-class poor batting performance. So, I think Liam has done bloody well and the margins are pretty tight between, you know, being on the podium and not, and you know, and if your team are not on it and they're trying to chase their tail to get the setting right, these cars are all pretty much the same. And if you can't find that magic setting and then you start going around in circles trying to find it, you forget where you were, it can get worse. But it's really great for New Zealand motorsport, like you mentioned, that 1-2, to have those two drivers there is what we're doing as a nation, and to have the flag and anthem is really special.
It certainly was, and of course, you know, I really believe that New Zealand motorsport, I think this year's been a fantastic year for New Zealand motorsport. You know, we talk about the Giz, we talk about Liam Lawson, Marcus Armstrong, we talk about Mitch Evans and the Formula E. You know, this has, you know, like, I think we've got a generation of New Zealand drivers that basically seeds well for the future of New Zealand motorsport, Sean.
Oh, exactly. You know, Mitch Evans was in the running to win that title. Yeah, Scott Dixon, he obviously didn't win it this year, IndyCar, but we had Scott McLaughlin go into that from, three supercar titles and won Rookie of the Year in IndyCar, and there's no comparison there between those two kinds of car. A bit of a bugger that the Jacks Ridge Rally event has been cancelled, but obviously they're getting ready for Rally New Zealand, which is awesome to have that back here, and we can sort of see the part that New Zealand can play in the world of motorsport. We may be away from it all, mate, but there's a lot of talent here and a lot of wonderful people that make motorsport happen as well. And even on the local scene, Eamon, there's a new sort of Super GT series starting up here, which is cool, you know, Ferraris and Porsches, McLarens, Lamborghinis racing. And that's proving really popular. I think they've got every place on the grid is filled. So motorsport is actually coming right. I mean, obviously, we're moving away from that sort of copying the V8 supercar sort of thing. But even in saying that, we've got some talent in the supercars at the moment, not just Shane, but Andre Heimgartner. And yeah, he's looking pretty good with that. Fabian Coulthard still ticking away. So, I think across the world, we're doing pretty damn well. And don't write off Brendan Hartley. Not doing bad in that Le Mans team, is he?
No. In fact, he's done really well. Well, we might as well talk about the new normal. 10 for 119, but the old normal, 62 out. What was some... I never thought in my lifetime, mate, that I would ever see Sir Richard Hadlee's 9 for 52 ever be beaten by anyone, but that bowling performance was extraordinary, but, oh... Geez, the batting was absolutely shocking from New Zealand, that innings.
How good do you have to be at being bad to get that bad a batting effort? You know, at some stage, wouldn't they have said, hey, we just need to settle this down and sort this out? But, oh, look, I don't know. I mean, I wasn't out there and, you know, and it's a shame. I hope it doesn't overshadow their bowling performance, because that is something else. They see there's a lot of debate saying, oh, hang on, they got 152. How can, you know, this other scored much more? And I said, no, he got a 10 for, you know? It doesn't matter. The fact that he got the whole team out, that is phenomenal. And what, only the third player to do it, is that correct?
Yeah, that's correct. And so the other players were Jim Laker, Emil Kumley. So he becomes the third player in the history of Test cricket. Now, if you're in that top three, that's just something that I don't think we'll ever see again in our cricket lifetime, not only in world cricket, but in New Zealand cricket. And, you know, I watched that, and the euphoria, it was the euphoria of the 10 wickets, then watching, and then the reality set in very quickly after, when we were about 38 for 5, I thought, oh dear.
Yeah, but you know what? The other thing too is he didn't do that or not that would play them in a test year. You know what I'm saying? they're not figures that need an asterisk beside them.
Yeah.
That's got to be
nice. I'd agree with you. Yeah. I'd have to agree with you on that. So I hope that you enjoyed your first weekend of a little bit of freedom and went out for a nice lunch in one of your local restaurants, Sean, and had a few nice brews.
No, I haven't done that yet. But don't worry, it's in the planning. But we did get a brunch, and it was pretty damn awesome. I won't say it was normal, but I'll take what we can get right now.
Yeah, well, I know that you haven't been able to visit some hospitality spot, I know you've been a good family man that you are. I actually volunteered to make it up for you, so yeah, that's fine.
Yeah, I appreciate you taking one for the team.
Oh, yeah, when it involves hospitality, I'm always, you know, I've always got the front foot out, Sean.
Good man. I hope the wallet's not hitting as much as your head.
Well, I have to say, you know, it felt a bit unnormal on Saturday morning. That's all I've got to say. I haven't felt like this for a while. But anyway, hey, Sean, thanks a lot. And we're going to catch up next week for a bit of to see the end of the Formula One. We'll talk a bit more sports and one more show after that, and then you don't have to hear from me until next year, which will be a highlight for you.
You're all good. I look forward to it, mate. I'll talk to you on Monday.
Catch you. Ladies and gentlemen, that was Sean Summerfield. Wow, really good insight into motorsports. And we had a bit of a laugh afterwards. So next up, we've got Noel Barclay. We're going to talk in depth about the qualifiers for the Football World Cup to the OFCs. And, you know, I've got an opinion, and I know Noel will have an opinion. So after this, we'll get on to Noel Barclay. Welcome everyone back to the West Prince Sports Review here on Planet FM, and now we're going to talk a bit of football. And of course, we'll do our usual talk on EPL and Phoenix, and we'll also talk about the landmark day for women's football in this country with the debut of the Phoenix in the W League in Australia. But I don't think we can start off without actually mentioning what actually happened during the week. The OFC Football World Cup qualifiers have been set for March. Unfortunately, they're outside the international window. Now, here to speak to me about this is former All White Noel Barclay, and I'm going to be strict. Good afternoon to start off with, Noel, but I'm going to be really straight to the point. I really just feel that the OFC have done New Zealand football and Danny Hay and the All Whites no favours. I also believe that they don't get the big picture. Having the All Whites potentially at the World Cup in 2022, it's good for Oceania football. And it's good in a sense is that there's focus on the Oceania region. So, you know, that's my opinion. I feel sorry for, you know, people in this country who've worked hard, especially for Danny Hay. Yeah, look, from us, and us, he's a error, deceased. Is that they made a choice of two decisions. Of one day, I said, wonder which one for New Zealand, or play a full group, so, and beware. It went. The reason being that the Qatar to play one knockout game. Preference seemed to be the logic of getting the OF. Yeah.
It's just a soul feeling. Yeah, I'm moving with the feet. It's just a soul feeling. Yeah, sounding kind of sweet. Not talking about religion, no. Not talking about fashion, no. Not talking about money, no. Not talking about sight from the right. It's just a soul feeling, a moving with the feet. It's just a soul feeling, a sounding kind of sweet. I'm talking about my girl.
Everyone, we just had some technical difficulties here, but we've got Noel Barclay back on the line. Just apologies here, Noel, but getting back to what, like the preference from what was discussed was a quarterfinal, a semi-finals, and a final. Now, to me, it sounded more logical, like for Danny Hay and the All Whites, he's going to have to take a bigger squad or find players that are that can be available. And we're not talking to Sapri Singh, who's in a promotion battle, or Chris Wood, who's in a relegation battle.
Yeah, look, it's unfortunate, but I think from an OFC's perspective, they will tell you that they represent 11 full members, and that what they're trying to do is give countries that go to Qatar is more than one game, so they'd get three games. The thing is, if those things get voted on, you've got 11 votes and New Zealand's won, and invariably the islands will obviously, you know, pull together and do what works for them. It's pretty hard for OFC to think this is what we're going to do, because you actually need everybody on board. Hopefully it's a storm in a teacup. I think we're big enough and strong enough to be able to get through Oceania. If we can't get through Oceania, don't forget the pitches in Qatar will be absolutely fabulous. It'll be hot, yes, that'll disadvantage us. But I think we're still good enough. It just puts a little bit of a stressor on it. And, look, Oceania run the game for the region, and I'm not saying it's the right thing. I think the straight knockout would have been better for New Zealand, and then we only have one day, and we get all our best players back. But it's going to be quite political, that's for sure.
It certainly isn't anything that hasn't. The OFC has always had its storms and teacups and political issues. Anyway, we get on to the Phoenix. Men's Phoenix went down 2-0 to West Sydney. Some shocking refereeing decisions, but very much a landmark day for football in this country, the debut of the Women's Phoenix in the W League, a nil-all draw against West Sydney Wanderers. Some of your thoughts there, Noel?
Yeah, look, it was a bittersweet couple of days, really, because the Phoenix were completely in, the men's Phoenix anyway, were in the game all the way, and VAR in the A-League is a joke. I mean, they just seem to get it wrong all of the time, and how they didn't see the push is beyond me, and of course the game got away from the men then. Disappointing, but they're quite quite a few upset results on the weekend. Obviously, Melbourne side's losing, which means that it sort of evens itself out. But Sydney continue to struggle, which is incredible. The girls were unbelievable. I mean, they were plucked from obscurity to go and be professional footballers within the space of a few weeks. I believe the Australian TAB was paying $34 for the Phoenix to win and about $8 for the draw. I think that just tells you about what people thought of their chances. They were very heroic and did great and tougher things to come. But you got to say that some of those girls now have their eye on 2023 and the World Cup in New Zealand.
And you know what? And I suppose that it's been a fantastic week for women's football in this country. Not only with the Phoenix State going, but the win against South Korea during the week. And you know, it's a real boost as we head into that 2023 World Cup, where we have all these professionals, where there is an opportunity for a young New Zealand player to actually play in a competition like the W League, which is actually not a bad competition when you look at women's leagues around the world now.
Yeah, and I think all of a sudden we've got an expanded player pool. It looked like we only had about 20 players, which is pretty much the team that went to the Olympics. Now, we've now expanded that to a number of players playing in Europe and the US and so on, and here's another 20 here. So, you know, a lot can happen in 18 months in football, and obviously with the announcement of the games, I mean, we're a clear co-host. We're incredible. We've got 29 games. First game, obviously New Zealand at Eden Park, quarterfinals, semifinals. So, yeah, look, it's exciting. There's a lot of big games and over only four venues, so there's going to be decent quality here. And if you were a female footballer and you were knocking on either of these teams, you'd be knuckling down, because what an opportunity to play in a World Cup on your doorstep.
And I just think just the opportunity for New Zealand to get two quarterfinals and a semi-final. The semi-finals is huge. I wasn't expecting New Zealand to get a semi-final as part of the co-hosting agreement, but you know what? That's fantastic. Not only for the women's game, but for football in general in this country and for sports generally in this country now.
Yeah, I mean, I thought the Aussies would have pulled rank on that one, and we may have got the short straw, but we certainly haven't. And you know, we've got New Zealand playing in three cities out of the four, and obviously the semi-final, two quarterfinals. Opening game will be a sellout at Eden Park, I'm absolutely sure of it. But there's quite a bit of momentum with these three World Cups, cricket, rugby and football. Again, for you know, it's a real opportunity for New Zealand to get some gender equity and some social responsibility into female professional sport. I'm for one right behind it, and I'm sure they'll all be a success.
Yep, absolutely. Now we move on to the EPL. What a weekend it has been in the EPL. We're going to start off with some of the results. West Ham 3, Chelsea 2. I did not see that coming, but what a fantastic result it is for Moyes. Liverpool 1 and their Wolves 0 and Manchester City 3, Watford 1. Some of your thoughts on those games, Noel?
Well, Man City was a canter, really. I mean, they just rolled Watford the way most teams would expect them to do. And Bernardo Silva is just having the form of his life at the minute. Everything he touches turns to gold. A little guy who just plays up false nine and they basically can't track him. So they were good. Liverpool, whilst they completely dominated Wolves, then they were a bit lucky, you know. It was at 95th or 96th minute, something like that. They got the win that they deserved. I had the West Ham Chelsea game as a draw myself, and in the end, it could have been more than 3-2. They had plenty of chances, and Chelsea just looked a bit off. Mendy, who's been spectacular, he obviously had a bad day. Jorginho had another bit of a bad day. So, yeah, good to see West Ham close the gap. And the big three, obviously, chasing them as well. So, good week for most of those teams.
Yeah, and of course, then there's some of the other results. First one, Eddie Howe, 1-0 victory over Burnley. Brighton and Southampton had a 1-1 draw. Leeds and Brentford had quite an entertaining 2-2 draw. Some real concerns at Burnley. You picked them to be relegated at the beginning of the season, but then the pressure must be on Sean Dyche at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, and there's also a bit of a gap from that bottom three. You know, I mean, you'd back Newcastle to be able to spend their way out of it in January. I think they'll probably go for the likes of Jesse Lingard and all of those players. Have got 6 months to go. I think they'll be strong enough to get out of it. Burnley just haven't been the same team as they've been in previous years, and it does concern me, obviously, that they might go. And Norwich, who's obviously had a good start with Dean Smith, they got crumbled this morning by Spurs, who continue to be on the rise. I think the game in hand it gets them right up behind Chelsea. So yeah, some concern at the bottom of the table, and Spurs, Arsenal, Man United, of course, who sort of sneaked home this morning in it wasn't totally convincing win, but certainly very direct. And moved the ball quicker than what they have been, and it was competent performance, and there was a win, and most importantly, a clean sheet for the first time in 16 games at home. So it was a nice way to start the day.
Certainly was, and of course, when you actually have a look at it, like some of the other results, another win for Steven Gerrard, 2-1 over Leicester. But Leicester may have a few concerns, but probably a very, very safe to be a mid-table finish. When you talk about that chase for the fourth Champions League spot, and you can name your teams, it's either going to be West Ham, Spurs, Manchester United or Arsenal. I would say out of the four there, looking from my perspective, Snell, is that I see Spurs as the one that could actually, that look more than likely to get that four, and that's no offence to West Ham, but unless Rangnick can do something at Manchester United, I think it's looking more and more like Spurs, and I think Conte's turned them around.
Yeah, look, he has. The proof's in the pudding with Rangnick. It's too early to say. Although they do have a run of about six games now that you would think that they should win, and then they've got a run of horrible games. So, look, 5 weeks' time would be easier. But honestly, I got Man City winning the league now. I think the other two are faltering. Absolutely, West Ham would be, they'll be hauled in at some point, I'm pretty sure. And Conte, three wins from three. And you just know he's got that winning mentality. Harry Kane's got one goal, so that's going to change. You just know it's going to change. I'm pretty sure Man United will be chasing them all the way. So Spurs for me with Man United maybe is an outside chance.
Yeah, I would have to say that, but I'm actually picking Liverpool to win this league. Now, you might not be happy with my thoughts on that because I just feel that they're... they're just having this bit of luck at the moment, so that's going to be interesting. But looking at the week in general in football, in New Zealand, it's been a fantastic week.
Yeah, the game has never been in a better position, really. I mean, both men's and women's national teams winning. with the girls winning in Korea, the guys winning games away from home. You've got a professional team here. You've got tons of players playing around the world now. I know it hurts the local game, the national game. People want it. They miss the old National League because it was a good standard and all the best players play there. But you can't have both. You've got to send your players into professional leagues so that they can learn and develop. And the benefit for us will be down the track that we will be at World Cups, and when we are there, we're going to be competitive. We're not just going to make the numbers up.
Yeah, and I would say about this, because when I forgot to mention this earlier when we first came on here, I feel that our national men's side, I believe, and this is no disrespect to the 1982 side, no disrespect to the 2010 side, potentially we have a once-in-a-generation all-white side, Noel. And it's not because I believe that they could qualify for the World Cup, they could be competitive, but it's the style we're playing, and it's football that's entertaining to watch.
Yeah, I think that was always the missing ingredient. What 82 and 2010 had was, a bunch of, sort of professionals and obviously amateurs dotted around, not so much 82. But they had great character and great leadership and, individual talent. But we've got that now, and we've got it with very young, you know, young kids, 2019, 20, 21, a lot of them. And I sort of do wonder whether it will be guitar or it will be 26, where, you know, where they're older and they're all moved on to bigger clubs and they're all doing better. But let's hope that we get guitar works well. But the future looks bright, and there's just a factory of kids getting churned out at the minute from Olay Academies and obviously the Phoenix Academies and so on, and now the girls, of course, as well. So the future's bright, and because we really understood how to develop young players and give them pathways, and it's an exciting future for if you're a young athlete.
It certainly will be. Now, well, thank you very, very much. We did have a few. We had a second go at this, a second bite of the cherry. So it's always great to have you on, and we'll have you on again next week. Noel, enjoy the rest of the week, and hopefully we Manchester United can keep on their winning ways, Noel. But let's hope so. And he must have been happy for Fred to score.
Yeah, I was pleased for Fred. a lot of spec. And, look, you know what? Fred, you had a good game. I haven't seen that before. It happens every week. I'll be the first to eat my tongue for sure.
Absolutely. Well, now, thank you very much. And enjoy the rest of the week. And we'll catch up next Monday. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, that was Noel Barclay. And great. It was great having that chat about football, not only the EPL, but talking about the local stuff, which is really good. Next up, we're going to have a chat to New Zealand cricketing great Glenn Turner about the cricket, and it's not looking too good for New Zealand. Also, I'll just give everyone a quick update on what's going to happen in the next couple of weeks. And last live show will be on the 20th of December, but we will have, hopefully I'll be able to arrange a few pre-records, a few programs during the Christmas and New Year break. So we'll pay a few bills and we'll hit a bit of music, and next up we'll have Glenn Turner.
Got this in pocket, got paddle, I am gonna use it, intention. Motion, restrained emotion. I've been diving, detailed leaning. No visa, just seems so pleasing. Come make you, make you, make you notice. Gonna use my arm, gonna use my legs, gonna use my style, gonna use my sidestep.
Everyone, back to the Whispering Sports Review here on Planet FM, and of course now we're going to talk a bit of cricket. Wow, what a weekend it was for the New Zealand versus India. India 325, And, of course, we talk about that bowling display by Ajaz Patel. New Zealand all out for 62. India, 276 for 6 declared. New Zealand, 140 for 5 with 400 to chase. A very improbable win. But here to talk to us is one of the greats of our cricketing game and one of the real fantastic thinkers, New Zealand cricket legend Glenn Turner. Good afternoon to you.
Yes, good afternoon, Eamon.
Well, I have to say, it's not looking too promising for New Zealand, but before we get on to this, you were the coach in 1985 when Sir Richard Hadlee got the 9 for 52. In my lifetime, I never thought that this record would be beaten, but the bowling display by Ajaz Patel, what a brilliant bowling display. Your thoughts?
Yeah, well, obviously, statistically, it's better, but it's hard to have beaten Patel's performance at Brisbane because, you know, I mean, they didn't get a big score and obviously against Australia, I suppose, in the eyes of New Zealanders, that's more significant. But having said that, you know, getting 10 wickets in India against India is something rather special. You know, I think Ajaz, they call him Ajaz, I think is, yes, the rather than the A being an A. But, yeah, he's, I was looking up his record, actually, which is quite interesting. His first class figures are 68 wickets at what's 32.51 average, which is, you know, reasonable, but not special at provincial level, if you like, a normal first-class level. In tests, he's played 10 tests, 29 wickets. He's got a best 5 for 59 at about the same average as he has in first class. So this is one out of the box for him. And I was really pleased for him because in the first test, he'd come out in New Zealand and, of course, being in Auckland and them not playing cricket and so on in our domestic scene, meant that he would have only been able to practice in the nets. And so he was a bit rusty in that first test, and he bowled a number of loose balls, you might say. But fortunately, he got things together in that second test where he got a lot more consistency, and he was able to play the percentages with patience and so on. So, yeah, it was great to see. and I think the thing that it's done most for him is it's more likely to have secured his position in the team, at least for the next series of games. And I'm sure now that he's shown enough that he's likely to be regarded as our number one spinner. And at the age of 33, bowling spin, it means that, you know, he's probably got another 5 years or so there. With the side, so New Zealand cricket can get quite a lot out of him. I must confess that on breakfast television this morning I saw and listened to an old mate of mine, Dipak Patel, who played with us at Worcester for a while and before he came onto New Zealand. And Dipak had been a coach of his, and he said that they had discussed whether or not he would go from bowling a medium pace stuff to spin, and obviously very happy that he'd done that. But he also talked about the humility side of Ajaz and the family as a whole, and to see his father and his mother and his wife and young daughter, it was quite touching, really. In fact, Dipak choked up a bit with that because he knows their family very well. So, you know, it was obviously wonderful to see, and he knows that, you know, things have to be in a line where no one else takes a wicket, and perhaps they should have, and so on, for something like this to occur. But good luck to him, and it was marvellous to see.
Yeah, and, he, and 14 wickets in a test match is nothing. In a test match, is nothing to be it's to be sneered at, because you know there wouldn't be too many cricketers that possibly would get up to that record, with possibly the exception of when you look at Sir Richard Hadlee and Daniel Vittori. Just when we, I just want to discuss some of the issues around batting, and of course we spoke last week. There was a few concerns on our middle order. The concern, something that I noticed was, and it has creeped in a number of times when we've been in series in the last few years, is in some cases our inability to play spin. What were some of your thoughts on that, Glenn?
Sorry, I just didn't quite pick up that last bit of
your question. Yeah, the inability for our middle order to play spin bowling. It's been exposed in the last couple of test series, any time we've been overseas in the subcontinent or in the UAE, that we've had issues against spin bowling.
Yeah, well, that's true. It was disappointing to see that. But I think, you know, if Williamson and Conway had been there, that would have looked a lot stronger. But it is an area which we still need to work on. And I remember some years ago, New Zealand cricket got in the Pakistani off-spinner at that time, who bowled the, well, whatever you want to call the carom door ball or the other one, and trying to disguise it. I just can't recall his name. But I thought at the time, really, they needed more than that. They, other than being able to detect the difference between one delivery and another, you also need to work out, from a batting point of view, as to how to play spin bowling as a whole. So it's one thing to detect something, and it's another to be able to work out how to play it technically. And, you know, I think one of the things with Nicholls being still there at the crease on 30-odd, it's an opportunity for him to get more exposure under those Indian conditions against top spin to really learn how to play spin, because there's nothing better than experiencing something, if you like, on the day or in a match situation rather than out in the nets. And he's had his difficulties with spin over time, and we saw that in the first innings when the off spinner got one to carry straight on and went through, he left a gate between bat and pad covering four turn that wasn't there. You're right, spin bowling has always been a problem for us and looks as though it's continuing to be so.
Yeah, it's just that when we've looked at spin bowling, and I just, well, these are unusual conditions for New Zealand cricket to be playing. And then, you know, many would say that India have suited the pitches to suit themselves and to suit spin, which is, you know what, good on them for doing that, because I know in the fact that New Zealand has had suited pitches to suit our bowling. But the concern was that it was just so how easily some of these dismissals were going. It was actually quite concerning.
Yes, on the point that you make about hometown pitches, it was only many years ago when I was playing in India. I remember it might have been a journo or someone anyway, a local, when this subject came up. He said, well, you know, surely when you play in another country, they're entitled to produce pitches which suit them, as we would expect you to do when we go to New Zealand. And that's precisely what tends to happen. Yes. But as far as the dismissals in that first innings of 62, I worked out that there were probably only two of our batsmen who got deliveries which had their name on it. Effectively, that's another way of saying, you know, I mean, they would have got most people out. But the rest tended to, through a lack of technique or just a bad decision, particularly, obviously, the top end with their opening bowler bowling, got two of our guys out hooking, Latham in particular. He will obviously look back on that and say, was I really on the ball and concentrating and making sure that I didn't play that particular shot? But I will add something further, Eamon. I have noticed, and I don't think it only applies to New Zealand cricket, when you get to the last game of a tour, and they've been away for quite a while, and they've had the added stresses and strains of not being able to go out socially as you normally would if you didn't have COVID around, some of them in their own minds, whether they liked it or not, were probably on the plane back home, and before the game even started. And it's not a matter of an excuse. It's a psychological thing that can happen to players, and that may have been a contribution to what one's already covered.
Yeah, that's an interesting point of looking at it, Glenn. And you have a look at some of these players haven't. We also actually have a look at there are a number of players that weren't available. Like we've mentioned that Williamson and Conway were out injured. Trent Bolt wasn't available. So the main concern is that yep, they're probably going to get back to New Zealand and regroup and get ready for the series against Bangladesh. And then, of course, the March series, which I'm really looking forward to in New Zealand, is the series against South Africa, as well as the one day as in Australia, the Chappell Hadley series.
Well, yes, I mean it's starting over again, and certainly our batsmen and our bowlers too. I mean, we've got bowlers. You would have noticed that their two got up to 140 odd, and so they were faster than our group. But our opening bowlers and our seamers generally are more into swing and seam than they are into pace. And so when you come across conditions which assist both of those, which New Zealand does, then you will expect better results from them. And batting-wise, once again, playing against that sort of bowling, our guys in domestic scene, etc., have sorted out their techniques to deal more with that than they have the turning ball. So the expectation, I think, and quite rightly so, will be that we will get back to looking more like the number one test side in world cricket.
Absolutely, Glenn. That's correct there, sir. Well, I have to say, Glenn, it was great catching up with you again, speaking a bit of cricket, and I hope wish all the best for Christmas and a Happy New Year for you and your family down in the South Island, and hopefully we can catch up some point next year and talk a bit more cricket. And we won't be talking 2020, Glenn. You'll be pleased to hear that.
Yes, can I just throw in a wee dig at that?
Yeah.
I can't resist it. Is that I just thought to myself that if one of the New Zealand bowlers got 10 for in an innings and it was in a 20-over match, you would just smile to yourself and say, yeah, well, what would you expect? They're all trying to slog out, and it's a primitive game, so it means nothing. So, yes, I look forward, and it'll be a pleasure to talk to you again, Ab.
Thank you very much, and that's us done for the day. Thanks a lot, everyone. I hope you enjoyed the show.